We want to welcome you back to the statewide conversation with Minnesota state officials on COVID-19. It's brought to you by the Ampers Network of radio stations. My name is Heidi Holton. I'm live from the KEXC studios on the snowy banks, the frigid banks of the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. Thanks for tuning in today. The Minnesota Department of Health Director of Infectious Disease Epidemiology Prevention and Control Division, Chris Ayersman, is back with us today to answer questions that came in this week from listeners around the state. If you didn't get a chance to send or call in your question, you can email covid@ampers.org or call 612-562-9895. This conversation is a collaboration of Ampers Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. Chris Ayersman is back. Thanks so much for taking time for us today.
Glad to be with you again.
Well, we just got some notice from the governor and the lieutenant governor about some adjustments to the COVID-19 mitigation measures. I wonder if we can kind of start there. That must mean we're at a pretty good place. And tell us where we're at with that.
Well, the governor has decided, weighing, you know, both the public health information that we have in terms of where we're at with cases and our test positivity, as well as, you know, looking at what we need to do to make sure that our economy is healthy, and has made some decisions to open things up a bit more. And so certainly that is positive news.
And so some of the changes have to do with restaurants. They can be open until 11 o'clock now, and they've increased capacity. But what does that mean? Should we still be keeping distance from people, wearing masks?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I mean, I think that all of the community mitigation measures that we've talked about for the last, well, it seems like forever, but I guess it's the last 9 or 10 months, are still incredibly important. So this allows, more people to have access to restaurants and things and be out a little bit later, but no, masking is still very important. Avoiding, crowded gatherings, particularly if you are someone who is at high risk for complications of COVID, and then social distancing. Those things are still very important. So while this signals a very positive move, it does not mean that the pandemic is over and that those mitigation measures are no longer important.
Okay. All right. That is good to know. Well, we're going to get to some of our listener questions that came in this week. And one of them is looking for an overview of where we are right now when it comes to the vaccine. They said that 10% of the population has now received the vaccine in the United States. How is Minnesota doing?
Actually, Minnesota is doing just a little bit better than that. We have about just over 11% of our state has been vaccinated. And that is, I think, important to keep in mind, that when we're talking about our population, we are talking about the whole population, even though right now the Moderna vaccine is only eligible for people who are 18 and over, and the Pfizer vaccine for individuals 16 and over. But we're saying that even with that, 11% of our population has been vaccinated. And I think what is significant as well is that it has just not even been a month since the governor indicated that we would start vaccinating people 65 and older, and 30% of that population has been vaccinated.
Wow. We also heard this week, I know people were getting vaccines at pharmacies this week. Can you kind of explain how that happens, how they end up with some of the vaccine? Where is it coming from?
Sure. So, a couple of things. We certainly, you know, have over the last weeks tried to expand the network of providers offering vaccine, because we know people want to get vaccinated close to home and with providers that they're familiar with. But one of the things that was added this week was a federal retail pharmacy program. That program identified two pharmacies in Minnesota, that is Walmart and Thrifty White, so they're retail pharmacies, and they received doses of vaccine directly from the federal government and are now offering vaccine to persons 65 and older. In addition, Walgreens, which has been a partner with us in vaccinating our skilled nursing and assisted living facilities, had about 8,000 doses that they could use this week. And so they also were offering vaccination at sites across the state. That was just a one-time opportunity. The Walmart and Thrifty White will be ongoing.
Okay. And I think a lot of people still, you see it on social media, they want their vaccine. There still is not enough for everybody, but it's increasing, and the opportunity and where we can get it is increasing as well. Is that right?
Yes. Absolutely. No, I realize that people are frustrated, but not everyone can be first in line. And just to keep in mind that when we included 65 plus, that is 918,000 people in Minnesota. When we included E12 and childcare, that's about another 250,000. So we were already working to finish our health care and our long-term care residents. And we added 1.1 million additional people. So we have a lot of people who are eligible to be vaccinated, and we do not have nearly as much vaccine as we need. And we know that our healthcare system could handle much, much more vaccine. We just are not getting that much from the federal government.
All right. Another question that came in this week from a listener. They said, how will the Johnson & Johnson vaccine affect our state's efforts to get everyone vaccinated? I'm worried that some people won't want this one because it's not as effective as the others. Is that right? Are you concerned?
Well, certainly we are really grateful for any new vaccine supply. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine, they have submitted to the FDA for approval, and the Vaccine and Related Biologics Advisory Committee will be meeting on February 26th. So we anticipate that in early March, we should start to see some vaccine coming from this manufacturer. The listener is correct in that this vaccine is not as effective as the Pfizer and Moderna, which are about 95% effective overall, but this vaccine is 85% effective in preventing severe disease and provides 100% protection against hospitalization and death. So certainly offers, solid protection. And what's really beneficial about this vaccine is that it is a single dose. So this will be a great vaccine for us to use with populations who may not be likely to want to come back for a second dose. So we anticipate that this vaccine, does have a lot to offer. It also has shown to be effective against the variant that was first identified in South Africa. So certainly it will be another important tool in our toolbox. And one of the things that we want people to think about is that you should take whatever vaccine you're offered. They will all have made it through the FDA approval process. They're effective and safe. And we need to be focusing on making sure that we have broad community protection. So the more people who get vaccinated, the more we achieve that goal. So that's more important than worrying about one vaccine or another.
Well, let's stay on that idea of the second doses of the vaccine. A listener wondered this week, they want to know if some people are not showing up for their second dose and what will happen if people don't get the second dose. Will that affect how and when we reach herd immunity?
Well, I can say that we've not been hearing about problems with second doses at this point. We do ask and recommend that providers schedule that second dose at the time of the first dose so that, you come in to get that first dose and they're kind of already planning for you to get the second dose because it is really important for that. So as I said, we've not heard about problems getting second doses, but we do know that they are definitely needed for protection. So we want people to be attentive to finishing out the series. Now, certainly, as we just talked about, the Johnson & Johnson product will help address that because that is a single dose.
It's Chris Ehrsman from the Minnesota Department of Health, Director of Epidemiology. We had an email this week. They said, do you think that the vaccine is helping Minnesota have lower case numbers already? And what factors do you see contributing to the lower case numbers right now?
Well, certainly, I think it's a combination of things. I think the pause that we had in November and December did make a big difference. When we compare how Minnesota looks compared to our neighbors in other states, we had a much lower peak when we did have that big peak. It went down more quickly. So I definitely think that the pause really helped us, and the fact that people, you know, made efforts and changed their activities to, you know, over the holidays to really do what was safe for everyone. So that certainly made a difference. But I do think that vaccination is contributing. We know that it's starting to make a difference in our long-term care settings. So yes, I think that we were on a positive track with the reduced numbers coming off of the pause. And I think vaccination is only going to make that better. You know, one of the things that we talked about is that if you think about vaccination like a fire hose, you know, that is spraying water to put out a fire, the ability of the hose to do that will be much greater if the fire is not as hot and strong. And so certainly we want to make sure that even as we have vaccine coming in, that we're doing what we need to keep our transmission rates down so that vaccine will have the best opportunity to wipe out transmission.
Well, your fellow state leader in infectious disease, Dr. Michael Osterholm, has said he's very worried about a surge coming, perhaps this spring in March. Are you concerned about that?
Yeah, we are definitely going to be paying very close attention. I mean, we've started to see some of the case numbers. And when I say go up, I don't mean in nearly the way that we talked about this fall, but just internally as we're talking amongst our various teams, you know, we are starting to see more reports related to sports and related to school and things like that, just because there has been more opening up and more activity in those areas. So it's important that even as the governor has announced the new options for people, that we take advantage of those in a safe manner, that we continue to wear our masks, that we continue to be attentive to social distancing, and that we continue to be cautious about group settings, particularly if you are at higher risk for complications of COVID. I think if we're doing that, that will make a difference. But the concern is that because we've identified new variants that are circulating, that those are more readily transmissible, and we want to make sure that they don't kind of take over and become the most common type of transmission that's occurring from COVID.
So what's your advice for folks who have gotten, say, their first dose of the vaccine? Should they still be following all the guidelines? And if so, explain kind of why they need to still be masking and staying socially distant.
Oh, absolutely. Well, a couple things. First of all, if you've only had one dose, you don't have complete protection. You haven't completed the series, so you're not safe or protected. The reason that you need to continue to mask and social distance and those things is because what we know about the vaccine is based on the clinical trials. And those clinical trials had clinical disease as an endpoint, which means that they did not evaluate for asymptomatic disease. And so it's very possible that people who have been vaccinated could still develop asymptomatic disease and pass COVID onto other people. We don't know about that at this point. There's still an evaluation. There's still studies that are being done, but there's a lot we still don't know. And so getting the vaccine is a wonderful thing, and it's going to make a big difference for our community, but it should not change masking, social distancing, all of those things. It should not change how you behave around other people, because it doesn't guarantee that you could still not be a risk to others.
So, Chris, this one is wants you to look into the future, this question. This person said, I have a family wedding in Texas in October of 2021. It's already been put off and rescheduled twice, and I appreciate the bride's patience. Just wondering, if you were a betting woman, will this wedding happen, or do you think it's going to get delayed again?
Wow. Well, I have to give kudos to the bride for her commitment to following the COVID guidance. I know that's got to have been hard on her and her family. I would say that October 2021 is much more likely to be successful than, say, May 2021. We really hope that a large proportion of the population could be vaccinated over the summer. So I would think that by October, you know, we would have hopefully reached that 80% coverage level. So I think for all of our sakes, as well as this bride's, I hope that this wedding is not delayed. And I don't know if this person might have to buy a plane ticket, but they should have a much better idea by this summer of where we're at with vaccine and things, and that could help inform a purchase if that's necessary.
So just a tiny bet you'd probably put on that.
Well, I put a bigger bet on October than I would on May.
Okay.
So yeah, but no guarantees in this world anymore.
Right.
So.
We had another email from someone who said, my healthcare provider sent me an email saying that they have vaccines for people 75 and older. Then they are going to work down their list of people 65 and older. They said they will email me when they reach people my age in the mid 40s. I'm fine with waiting for my turn, but my question is, should I just wait for my healthcare provider to contact me, or should I go to a community center when they open up to my age group? Just wondering.
Well, I think for someone, a healthy person in their 40s, it may be a while before we are vaccinating in that group. As I mentioned, you know, the groups that we're working to get through are relatively large, so it could be a while. But I think when the time comes, you can choose whatever provider you feel most comfortable with. So if you have the opportunity to get vaccinated through a workplace or through a community setting, and that's earlier than you would through your healthcare provider, it's fine if you feel comfortable to go ahead and get vaccinated there. I think the most important thing to keep in mind is probably good to be patient at this point, because I think it'll be a few more months before we are able to vaccinate in that age group.
Earlier this morning, we talked with a local healthcare provider, and they said that their employees were about 60% vaccinated and that they thought that was pretty good in their eyes. They said that their employees have concerns because the vaccine is new, and they also have questions like this one that we received from a listener this week. Is the vaccine safe for pregnant women? And if a pregnant woman is vaccinated, will that protect their baby once it's born?
So right now, there's very little data on the safety of COVID-19 vaccines in pregnancy. There are studies planned of, you know, looking at pregnant women. And certainly the manufacturers are following women who have been a part of the clinical trial who subsequently become pregnant. Right now, based on what we know and how we understand this mRNA vaccine works, it's felt that it's unlikely to pose a risk to the pregnant person or their baby, because it's not a live vaccine. But, you know, that is something that if the pregnant woman is someone who's in a category to be vaccinated, they should talk with their healthcare provider, and they can, you know, talk through their risk of COVID and all of those things. But there will be more information coming on this in the future. And I think the other thing to keep in mind is obviously that pregnancy is a time-limited condition. And so certainly if the individual would choose not to be vaccinated while they're pregnant, then they could go ahead and seek vaccination once that's done.
I saw this week that Target is giving rides and time off to employees that get the vaccine. So it's not required of them, but there's some incentive there. When I spoke of this local healthcare provider saying that not everybody working there has gotten it, are you seeing other businesses, other places have incentives there? And is the health department worried about especially healthcare places where people, not all the employees are getting the vaccine?
We know that in some of our long-term care settings, there's been more of a reluctance on the part of workers to get vaccinated. And I think, you know, some of the things that we're hearing are just that they want a little bit more time. They don't want to be the first ones vaccinated. And I think the good thing is that the programs that we've had do allow for sort of coming back. So, for instance, when we look at residents in long-term care, about 80 to 85% of the residents are choosing to be vaccinated. But when they come back again to offer the second doses, more individuals are saying, hey, you know what, I think I'd like to get a first dose. And the same thing is true with staff. We're seeing about, you know, 40 to 50% of staff taking the vaccine right off the bat. But what our providers are telling us is that when they're coming back for those additional doses, more and more people are interested in getting vaccination. I think there's some people who wanted to be the first people to get vaccinated, and then there are other people who say, yeah, I want to get vaccinated, but I think I'll give it a few weeks before I take it.
We had a listener question about the origins of the vaccine this week. They said, I hear people arguing about whether this novel coronavirus may have started in a lab. That is, it was a lab experiment gone wrong. Or whether it was something that jumped from animals to humans. Can you, in very simple terms, please explain why it matters how this virus came into being and why we don't know for sure about its origins?
Well, I would say that certainly, you know, we're always interested in what we can learn about how a new virus would develop, because it gives us information that we can use for preventing this kind of thing in the future. One of the important considerations certainly is the idea of zoonotic disease. That means diseases of animals that can infect humans as well. And the data that we have at this point, so, you know, virologic data, the epi data, veterinary data, all of these things really suggest that this new virus came either directly or indirectly from, you know, a SARS-like virus that infected bats or kind of scaly anteaters in Asia and Southeast Asia. One of the things, and here's an example of why it kind of matters. We know that in some parts of the world, they still have live animal markets where mixing between humans and animals can occur. And that, while very important culturally, can be a problem because, you know, it provides the opportunity for viruses to jump from one species to another. You know, we've talked about influenza and how might a new strain develop? And it's oftentimes coming from an avian or swine variant. And so, you know, there are certain parts of the world where people and pigs and birds mix more frequently. And that means that there's a greater likelihood that there could be a crossover. And so that's why it is important for us to try and have a better idea of where a virus may have originated. It helps us understand about the virus, but then also, you know, it means that perhaps live animal markets are something that, you know, we should be thinking about. You know, we know it has an important place, but is it something that also is risky and we need to reevaluate? So that's why that kind of information is important.
And finally, a question that came in. We appreciate hearing you on the radio over these many months of the pandemic. It is reassuring and helpful. My question is, what are your main worries right now, and how have your worries changed as the pandemic has unfolded?
Well, I think all along, over the course of many months, there have been different things that have caused great stress. And obviously this fall, with the large number of cases, that was, you know, incredibly concerning. I think at this point, a couple things are concerning to me. One is the exhaustion of healthcare and public health. It's been over a year of very, very intense work for all of us in healthcare and in public health, and the work isn't done yet. So that's a concern that I have for the team and for the teams that serve patients. But the other thing is, as we talked about, I'm concerned about exhaustion in the public as well. You know, we've had some positive news, and that's great, but I know that everyone just wants to be done with this. And so I worry that even as things are getting better, we are seeing variants circulating, and they have the ability to throw a curveball in this baseball game we're in, as Dr. Osterholm says. And so that's my concern, is that we don't let down our guard too quickly. We have this great tool of vaccines. They're coming. We're getting people vaccinated. If we can hang on to the end of the game, I think we'll be in a much better place. So that's really what I'm worried about, is that I don't want us to let down our guard too soon. But I'm exceptionally hopeful at the progress that we've made with the vaccines that are now available.
You know, the Lieutenant Governor has told us that they're happy in the change in the president, that things are going better when it comes to vaccines. What have you seen from the Department of Health with a change in leadership in Washington?
Certainly, I think what we've seen is we've seen more vaccine coming to us, which has been very positive. It's coming in increments, but every bit of additional vaccine means more people and a greater proportion of our population vaccinated. And I think the other thing is just more cohesive messaging, or a greater desire for us to have a consistent message across the country. One of the greatest challenges that we identified back in H1N1 was inconsistency across states. And I think we've seen that with COVID. And I'm hoping that we'll continue to see more desire for consistency across the country under this administration. I think it helps. We need to be able to adapt to our unique circumstances, but we also need to make sure that there's some level of consistency. And so we're going to be looking for that.
That is Minnesota Department of Health Director of Epidemiology, Chris Ayersman. Thank you so much for your time today and your clear explanations.
Oh, glad to join you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This broadcast is a collaboration of community radio stations throughout the state with AMPRS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities, and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. You can listen to this full conversation, share it with your friends, find it at kaxe.org. And if you want to ask a question next week, email covid@ampers.org or call and leave a message at 612-562-9895. I'm Heidi Holton for KAXE, KBXE. Stay safe, and thanks for listening.